Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast, Justin Cuthbert with you for the NHL Draft, Night 1, winners and losers. Now, I could give the winners to Maverick Lamoureux's parents, who are most certainly winners tonight. And I guess I could give Maverick the loser because he's probably never going to live down the moment his parents had in the stands after he was drafted by the Arizona Coyotes. But I'll try to be a little bit more detailed than that because this is, of course, a huge night on the NHL calendar, and we saw some pretty big moves made. Now, first take-home message, let's just never do a virtual draft again. I know there's been some rumblings about how they could just go back to doing it over Zoom and all that stuff because of the success, I guess, of the last two drafts. But it being in Montreal, it didn't hurt that Montreal had the number one pick. And it was an epic based on runtime. But it was still very, very entertaining. And certainly, when Slavkovsky was taken number one by the Montreal Canadiens, the reaction was very entertaining. The change of heart from Montreal Canadiens fans was also very entertaining. The fact that Montreal made itself the story of the draft and aggressively pursued its mandate made for a very, very entertaining product. So let's keep the draft in the stadiums because it can be very, very good, even if it is very, very long. But let's get into those winners and losers of the 2022 NHL draft first round. And I got to start with the number one overall pick, Juraj Slavkovsky. And I got to start with him because it wasn't supposed to be him, right? It was supposed to be Shane Wright. And Montreal did an unbelievable job preserving the intrigue. I mean, it really wasn't until moments, seconds before we saw a Slavkovsky sweater on the Montreal Canadiens' beautiful design that we knew that the number one overall pick was going to be Slavkovsky and not Shane Wright. And the reaction in the moment, the gasps in both languages when Slavkovsky's team was unveiled before even his name was pretty remarkable. So while it was great that, you know, it kept everyone on their toes, the Canadians, the one thing that hurt them, I don't even know if it hurt them because it all turned out to be pretty awesome. But like they didn't have that unanimous approval right away. By keeping their cards close to their vest, they had that awkward reaction. And maybe that will pave the way for, you know, maybe a weird relationship down the line if it doesn't go very well. But by the end of the night, Slavkovsky was the toast of the town. He was emerged from the interview process to do, I guess, another television interview, slapping hands with Canadians fans, getting these thunderous ovations. It was a scene. It was really, really awesome. And I don't think it hurt the optics for Montreal and their fans with the choice of Slavkovsky with Shane Wright sliding all the way down to number four. They didn't need that because I think fans turned the corner before that happened or as it happened. But it probably helped that Shane Wright wasn't this slam dunk choice in the minds of other teams that were involved as well. By extension of that, I have to give a winner to the Montreal Canadiens. And Kent Hughes, we know why there's a G in his name. It may be silent, but it is legitimate. This guy knows what he's doing. And he's him sitting at the table like a mob boss after he's orchestrating all these deals and making these moves. It's pretty impressive. He had courage in his conviction. He swerved from the consensus when he picked Slavkovsky. And then he showed this flair for the dramatic and the creativity to pull off a massive, massive acquisition on the draft floor. I think the story is going to be Shane Wright sliding to the Seattle Kraken, by the way, at four. But Montreal's ability to parlay two draft picks and a bit of a floundering prospect in Alexander Romanov into a former number three selection of the Chicago Blackhawks and a still pretty high quality prospect in Kirby Dach in a trade with the Chicago Blackhawks. Second story of the draft behind the first story that they orchestrated themselves as well. So Hughes and the Montreal Canadiens now have four forwards under the age of 22 who basically make up the foundation of this team moving forward. Slavkovsky and Dach, plus Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield, two centers, two scoring wingers as the foundation of their roster moving forward. Listen, it could blow up in their face if Shane Wright is twice the player that Slavkovsky is. We'll be looking at things differently. But they chose their route. And not only did they go their route, but they backed it up with a move to get that second center, the center that Shane Wright could have been slotting in behind Nick Suzuki. They went out and got anyway in Kirby Dach, who could maybe be a better player in his own right. Then they added another Slovak player by the end of the draft by getting Philip Massar with one of their later first round draft picks. So Montreal did a tremendous job. We can now kind of see the future with this team, with those four players. Lots of moves, I think, are still to come for Kent Hughes. There's a lot of players I think he still wants to move. Maybe he's a little unsettled with his performance because I think they still want to do more, like Jeff Petrie, Josh Anderson, lots of people or lots of players that I think they still want to move out. But, you know, filling their mandate and allowing us to see into their world a little bit and how they view the direction of this team, I think they'd had a great draft night. Another team that made a big move, overshadowed now, is the Ottawa Senators, who are, you know, they're assembling a pretty decent forward group as well. Before the Dach maneuvering, and still actually, the biggest move of Thursday's draft day, I'll call it, was Pierre Dorion's move for Alex DeBrincat. Three draft picks for one of the highest volume scorers since he broke into the league 5 years ago, a guy that's hit 40 goals twice, should have hit it three times, but of course we've had shortened seasons. And Patrick Kane's been a big part of the success of Alex DeBrincat, but this is a player I think that stands in his own right and should find a profitable home, maybe just as profitable, with Brady Tkachuk or Tim Stützle, Drake Batherson, Josh Norris. What is the formation of a really, really impressive top six in Ottawa, forward core that can compete in a really tough division? The rebuilds still may not be over, despite them declaring it over last year, but it gets a lot closer here with the addition of a purer scorer than we've seen in Ottawa in some time. Now, there is a small caveat here, because the Senators apparently almost threw away the opportunity to get DeBrincat, according to reports. Apparently, Ottawa almost packaged the number seven selection they used in the trade with Chicago Blackhawks to get DeBrincat. We'll get to the Chicago Blackhawks in a bit here. To get rid of beleaguered netminder Matt Murray in a trade with the Buffalo Sabres. They almost packaged that pick, I guess, to move down a couple slots in the draft with Matt Murray to get out of his $6.25 million salary. They almost gave away the seventh overall pick, which they used as really the key lure or bait in the Alex DeBrincat deal. But what prevented that from happening was Matt Murray nixing the deal to the Buffalo Sabres. So they have Matt Murray to thank, despite his reluctance to leave, for their acquisition of Alex DeBrincat. I'm also going to give a winner to the Seattle Kraken because they got, I think, the bounce that they needed. They got Shane Wright, the consensus number one on a lot of draft boards, most draft boards. Wright's slide could be a windfall here for the NHL's 32nd franchise, which had a pretty difficult inaugural season. Surprisingly, more surprising, I think, than Montreal going after Slavkovsky was that the Devils and Coyotes let Wright fall from 2 to 3 to 4 and in the hands of the Kraken, who now have secured the top-rated center in consecutive drafts, at least by consensus, Now, that should form the backbone of a competitive roster for seasons to come. It's very, very difficult to land franchise centers. And if the Kraken can show a little patience, they may have two in the system, two to build around, and one will have a serious chip on its shoulder in Shane Wright, who may or may not have given a pretty sizable death stare to the Canadiens table after he was selected by the Kraken. Arizona, I was flirting with the idea of having them as a winner. But I think passing on Wright for Cooley, like, listen, I'm not a draft expert, but Slavkovsky was one thing. The next two, I don't know if I can get behind that. I just feel like maybe they had it so in their minds that they wanted Cooley that they lost sight of the fact that Shane Wright was the better prospect. So I'm not going to give them their flowers. And also the fact that they looked like groomsmen up there was a little bit strange. Instead, I'll give the next one to the Buffalo Sabres. It's hard to miss on three first round picks, unless they are made in succession by the Boston Bruins. Still, it's worth commending the Sabres on landing a trio of centers, Matthew Savoy, Noah Osland, Yuri Kulich. Listen, they've already got a pretty good talent base forming there with Dylan Cousins and Alex Tuck, JJ Paterka coming up, Peyton Krebs. But with these three guys who could fit into a middle six moving forward, like all of a sudden they have a really competitive roster base. And that could be those three picks and a couple that I mentioned earlier could be the meat of the roster for years to come. I think this management team is figuring things out. So I think they deserve a little bit of credit. Lastly, Columbus Blue Jackets. I'm breaking the rules a little bit here. But it's work I think that needs to be highlighted because I've talked about the Blackhawks a few times. As the Blackhawks are trying to trade away large sections of their team to recoup value, well, it's to recoup value lost when they traded a lot of value to the Columbus Blue Jackets for Seth Jones. Now, David Juracek is the last piece of the puzzle brought back for Seth Jones, a package that also included Adam Boakvist and Cole Sillinger. And I think there's a good chance that David Juracek is the best defenseman in this draft. So this is the sort of trade that we could be circling and looking back at years down the line, because the Columbus Blue Jackets maximized the return on the deal for Seth Jones, one of the most important players, or one of the, you know, on the Mount Rushmore probably of Columbus Blue Jackets right now. Maybe that's a bit of a stretch, but an important player in franchise history, traded away, and they did a tremendous job making sure they got enough value there. Now, I think the biggest loser is probably the Chicago Blackhawks, willingly trading away a 40-goal scorer. Kirby Doc, like, they're liquidating so hard that even a 21-year-old that is just out of entry level is not safe from the rebuild that's happening, the scorched earth rebuild that's happening in Chicago and via Kyle Davidson. Anything and everything is for sale, and they will take on dead money. They take on Peter Mrazek's contract tonight in order to move up 13 spots in the draft in a trade with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'll get to that in a moment as well. So they're losers. They're almost daring Patrick Kane to ask for a trade, or at least that's what it seems. I guess they're doing the same with Jonathan Toews, but it's hard to imagine that anyone will take the Toews contract. But I mean, they are going so far in the rebuilding direction that it's almost seeming self-serving on the part of Kyle Davidson. Like, when you come in as a new general manager, you know, you kind of sell them on your idea. And I guess the idea for Davidson is to go this route, but it's also the best route for a GM that's trying to maybe maximize its time with the organization because they have to take it down before they build it back up. It's probably the best idea because this is an organization that's kind of in ruins anyway, but it's almost as though Kyle Davidson is getting the benefit of the doubt that like an Yzerman got with Detroit when he is unproven himself as a general manager in this league. So it's hard to put them in the loser category because they're filling out their mandate. I just think that, you know, you're going so far in the direction with the loss of a guy like Kirby Doc. I'm not sure why they were so willing to give up on the player, but maybe that proves to be a smart move on their part. And of course, the accumulation of assets, important for a team like the Blackhawks, and they were able to do some of that tonight. The biggest loser, I think, is the New York Islanders, who were, of course, the crucial middleman or middle team when putting together the Kirby Dach deal. And really, it's the optics that kill this team. So they get involved in a deal. They paid the number 13th overall selection, their own draft pick, for Alexander Romanov. I think they got another pick in there, but really 13 for Romanov. And that is a considerably higher price to pay than they received in return for Devon Toews, who got my fifth place Norris Trophy vote this year. So Lamoriello sent away. Devon Toews got back 2 second round picks, bought Alexander Romanov, who was not even in the same orbit as Devon Toews, and paid the number 13th overall selection. Now, admittedly, that's not quite fair because the marketplace in the NHL changes all the time, but the acquisition of Romanov itself is worth nitpicking. This is a player that's seen his progress stall. He may not have quite as high of a ceiling as we once thought. His offensive prowess that he showed in other leagues simply may not translate, doesn't look like it will. He's got some nice tools. He can be physical. He can move the puck, but he is very incomplete and may have had his progress stunted a little bit with the Montreal Canadiens rushing him through. But I think, that's bad enough, I guess. But what's particularly disappointing, I think, if you were an optimist, an Islanders fan that was optimistic heading into tonight, was that, you know, this team has been close. Like, it got to the Eastern Conference Final, their conference finals twice in a row, missed the playoffs this year. Like, you'd think, okay, a couple moves and they can compete again. And it looked like they were gearing themselves up for a huge move, a run at JT Miller, and they'd have to use that 13th overall selection, surely, in order to acquire JT Miller in the trade with the Vancouver Canucks. And yet they use their most valuable asset to get a defenseman who may or may not be able to help them in the short term. So when it comes to asset management, I think it's worth questioning what Lou Lamoriello is doing. And that's been the case for a long time. There's good, there's bad. There's success, and there's now maybe a sharp downturn. We'll see if that's true. Finally, I have to give the Toronto Maple Leafs a loser tag because of the troubling optics. They follow New York and they follow the Leafs. They've now traded away a first round pick to erase a boat anchor contract for the second time in 3 years, four drafts. The first time it was to clean up someone else's mess. This time it was to clean up Kyle Dubas's mess. Less than a year ago, the ink still dry on the contract with Peter Mrazek, 3 years, almost $4 million a season. It proves to be untenable in less than a year, and it costs the Leafs only 13 draft slots. So there's a lot of people praising Kyle Dubas for being able to get rid of this $3.8 million. Incredibly important because of his mistake, though. Incredibly important to do that. They only move 13 draft slots in a trade with Chicago, and a lot of people are questioning Chicago's role in this because did they quite get market value? Well, it doesn't really matter because you're just a living, breathing entity that can take on money to move up 13 spots, because why not? It doesn't hurt you in any way. But a necessary evil for the Leafs to get rid of Mrazek and 100% of his salary. And they moved to number 38 overall. So they'll be picking in the second round. They've had great success picking in the second round. But the fact of the matter is, despite the franchise being confident in its draft process, perhaps not convinced with the players that were going to be available to them, maybe convinced they can get a top 15 selection at number 38 overall, it's a move that carries a negative expected value. And it was a move required because they made an unforced error last summer. So if you're looking at this draft night as a vacuum, winners and losers on day one of the NHL draft in a vacuum, the Leafs gave away a first round pick and got back nothing. Now, that's not really the right way to look at it, because of course they're going to be able to choose 13 slots later in the second round, Friday morning. They may hit a home run. They've done it in the past. But if you look at it in the winners and losers of night one, the NHL draft, you have to put Toronto in the loser category, because they just gave away an asset. Leafs have also only drafted once in the first round over the last four years at the NHL draft. It's a troubling pattern. This is not what teams that are sustainably good do. You see the same teams over and over make picks and add players into their system on an annual basis. And it's something that has eluded this team, like getting capable goaltending, like getting a capable blue line, and like getting proper support for their core four players. Good and bad. Should be pointed out that the Oilers stomached a similar cost-cutting measure, finding the other team that's willing to take on salary, the Arizona Coyotes. They stashed Zach Kassian on the Coyotes, gave up two draft picks, I think a second and third rounder, and moved back three spots in the first round. Now, this is a loser move too. They could be losers here. If I wanted to add a third, I guess it would be the Oilers. I don't really feel compelled to defend it, but I add the Leafs over the Oilers, even though some measures say that the Oilers did worse in this regard, because in order to rectify their unforced error, which was made a couple years ago, I guess that has some sort of bearing here. But the Oilers did get a prospect tonight in Reed Schaefer. And I think one other small thing that should be taken into account is when they gave up draft picks, it was in future drafts. So it helps fit the Oilers' timeline just a little bit. I mean, we're talking about players that might be available 5-6 years down the road when it's clear the Oilers have to do their winning in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years. So I guess that's one little silver lining for Ken Holland for his loser-worthy move. But that's it. Now, I'm not a draft guy, so it's hard to really say which teams did specifically well, good and bad, based on the players. But oftentimes it's not about that. It's how you handle yourself on the draft floor as general managers who are trying to put the pieces to the puzzle together. And this is as good of a time as any in order to do that. And we saw the good. We saw a team like Montreal take control. We saw a team like Arizona help itself out. We saw a team like Chicago help itself out, but maybe because they've chosen a questionable direction, just a little bit, maybe too far in one direction. But by and large, it's a good night for teams. Most teams were able to do things that were positive given their mandate while add players into their system. So we shall see. This, most of it is a we shall see, including the moves that we're comfortable judging based on what we know about the players and teams involved. But that's it. Winners and losers. The first round of the 2022 NHL draft. We'll have a full breakdown on the weekend with Julian McKenzie, who is enjoying all things NHL draft weekend right now with all of his comrades there. But until then, thanks for listening to the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. And please do us a favor, rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff that you can do on either YouTube or any podcatcher that you listen on. Thanks again. It's been a great season, and we'll chat soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.